It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith.
Base hit up the middle. Tulowitzki's in to score. Travis with his fourth hit of the night.
Well, the Blue Jays have the right guy at the plate. He has been swinging a hot bat. You could just see the confidence in Devin Travis, even though he fell behind 0-2.
Well, he's on some kind of roll, but he's a good hitter. So, yeah, he's been doing a little bit of everything for us. Big hits, simple hits, and then the big home runs and all that. I think he's just coming into his own.
It's At the Letters for Wednesday, August 10th on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, last night you and I sat in a press box and watched what I would say is probably the worst all-around effort the Toronto Blue Jays have put out this season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's almost, I mean, aside from injuries, it's almost as bad as a game could get. They fielded poorly, they hit poorly, and they pitched poorly.
Yeah. I don't know who that team was, but like you have all like outfielders falling over themselves, Devin Travis throwing the ball away, nobody's hitting. You bring in reliever after reliever to get lit up. Danny Barnes, Scott Feldman, both of them just giving up, just laser beams. Not a good show.
Bases loaded, nobody out. Oh, zero runs from that. Yeah, it was a bad game. And if you play 162, you're going to have some bad ones. That's probably among the worst efforts you're going to see this year.
That's the thing about baseball. They get to do it all over again today. And because the Baltimore Orioles also lost, it really didn't matter.
First place.
Yeah. As dispiriting of a loss as that was and as poor of an effort as it was, it meant nothing.
Yeah, it's they're always missed opportunities, but you know, you look at these standings and Boston just a game and a half back. I feel like no team is going to run away with this. I mean, last year the Jays just passed everyone, and by mid-September we knew they were going to win the division. But I don't know. I think this year it might actually go down to the wire.
Yeah, I think it could go one of two ways. I'd say either like Boston gets really, really scary hot and runs away with it, or we come down to like the last series of the season and like Toronto, Baltimore, Boston are all within a game.
Man, Boston is a scary team. When you look at their position players right now, with Benintendi coming up and having a great debut, and then you have obviously Bradley and Betts and Bogarts and all these young players putting together big years, plus David Ortiz, that lineup is just so scary. I mean, it does seem like a team that could catch fire.
David Ortiz has hit a bit of a slump since the All-Star break, though, I believe. Go ahead.
It's all relative. I mean, with him, he's still having such a good year.
True. Yeah, but he's kind of winding down a little bit. And you kind of see, and you see why, especially when he runs the bases, you see, because people are just, why would you step away? You're hitting so well. Like, just watch this man run. Yeah. There's a reason.
Oh, for sure. His legs are essentially giving up on him, you know, for lack of a better way to put it. I mean, he doesn't have, foot speed was never a forte of David Ortiz's necessarily, but he's struggling to even round the bases these days.
Yes, but this is not the David Ortiz cast. This is At the Letters, the Toronto Blue Jays podcast. So we're going to talk about all things Toronto Blue Jays. We're going to do a mailbag later. It's going to be pretty good, but we must start with the six-man rotation, which is a thing the Toronto Blue Jays are doing. It's pretty novel, really. I can't remember the last time. Like, I'm sure it's happened recently, but I don't know off the top of my head the last time a team has gone with the six-man rotation.
Did the Mets do it last year?
Did
briefly?
They? Yeah.
I think they might have.
And it's generally not something that lasts.
No.
It's typically something that you do to just as kind of a stopgap, or I don't know, if you got a weird situation with players with options or something, or usually there's something going on. And the Blue Jays haven't put an end date on it. So it'll be interesting to see how long they can go with it. But generally, I mean, it gets so many guys out of their routine. It leaves you so thin, either on your bench or in your bullpen. It's not something that's really something that you can continue.
Yeah, and I guess that's almost a good place to start with this, because if you're, before we get into all the pros and cons, I mean, do you even think that this is going to last for a very long time?
It can't. It just can't. You know, like, you can only go so far with it. You know, at some point you get exposed. It's like, all it would take is one like 15, 16 inning game to throw everything for a loop, right? Or a couple untimely injuries. And all of a sudden, you know, you have to scrap it, really.
And I think because you have six starters, and this is a luxury, not every team has six capable big league starters. And so that allows the Blue Jays, if someone is struggling, if someone is injured, they can more easily go to a five-man rotation. Whereas if you're the Orioles and Chris Tillman's, you know, dealing with a little bit of calf soreness, pretty sure he's still going to start for you, because if you take him out, you're left with nothing.
Yeah, you feel better about putting somebody on the DL.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to ask somebody to gut it out when you already have five other capable starters. How long do you think it can last?
Yeah, I don't think it'll last much more than, you know, a few weeks. And I could be very wrong on this, but I just think that, you know, when you have someone like, let's say J-Hap, okay? So he's having this great season. He's going to get a lot of Cy Young consideration, and probably deservedly so. When you look at a 3 ERA essentially in 140 innings, that's the kind of year that gets guys votes in Cy Young balloting. And you don't want to squander any innings that he can offer you. And I think that when you have guys like Hap, Sanchez, and Estrada who are so good, a six-man rotation means you're getting fewer of their innings. And in Sanchez's case, I get why you back off. Estrada as well. He's dealing with back soreness, has been for essentially all season, probably more acute for the last month or couple months. But I get why you want to back off on him. When you have someone like Hap, or if Stroman were to catch fire, or if Liriano were to catch fire, it means you're getting fewer innings from these guys.
Yeah, that's not good. You even look at the effect on, you know, like you look at last night, Marco Estrada, his command was spotty. Like, there's no denying it. Like, he wasn't able to put the pitches where he wanted to. And he kind of said after the game, well, yeah, it was, you know, a little bit of rust. You know, it's been a week since I'd pitched. It's going to be a week until the next time he pitches. So that it does affect your routine and what you do between starts. And like, just talking to Pete Walker about it, he kind of said that, well, you basically just take after the day you start, you just don't do anything the next day. And then you start up your routine. Like, and that's kind of the way that you try to mitigate it, but it clearly does have an effect on pitchers who are used to going every 5 days.
The positive for that is they're at a point in the season where you have guys who are pretty banged up. So you are able to get them a little bit of extra rest. It's probably not necessary in April, but you know, I get the perspective where in August, heading into September, it probably doesn't hurt for these guys to get a little bit more rest.
Doesn't hurt for anybody to get a little bit more rest, really.
That's for sure. Well, would not argue on that one.
And this is all being done for the sake of Aaron Sanchez, because the Blue Jays, I mean, the plan to move him to the bullpen kind of blew up in their face a little bit. And I think, you know, right after they acquired Francisco Liriano, came out and said, yeah, this allows us to move Aaron Sanchez into the bullpen. And I think Aaron Sanchez heard that and said, well, hey, now I'd like a say in this. I don't know. I'm not sure that's the best thing for me. I'm not sure that's the best move. And all of a sudden, Ross Atkins is on a plane to Houston, and they're sitting down with them. They had a big, long meeting. Pete Walker, John Gibbons, Ross Atkins, Aaron Sanchez, they all talked it out. And now Aaron Sanchez stays in the rotation, despite the club making very, very public and direct pronouncements that he would do no such thing. So clearly, Aaron Sanchez swayed them to the direction that he wants this to go, and that's why you had the eight-man rotation, and all the other pitchers agreed on it. But is this going to work in protecting Aaron Sanchez?
It's tough to know. I mean, when you map out his innings from here, so they have 48 games left as we record this, and if you're dividing that by six, that's eight starts. And if you're thinking that Sanchez is probably going to go somewhere in the neighborhood of six innings per start, then you're pushing his innings pretty high up there. And
so 145 and a third right now.
Right. So if you add on to that, you know, six times eight innings, you're basically up to 190 before you even get to a potential playoff run.
And I think that the goal would be to not have to shut down Aaron Sanchez. Like, the goal would be to have him continue starting through till however deep into October you go, if you even get to play in October. That's going to be a tough thing to manage. Blue Jays do have some off days. Like, they obviously have flexibility if Larry Dickey able to come back on short rest. With the six-man rotation as it is, you could skip starts for Aaron Sanchez, but there's also the fact that Aaron Sanchez probably doesn't want to skip too many starts. I mean, I think he wants to continue starting regularly.
And it makes sense. I mean, to be in this rhythm, you know, these guys don't necessarily want to disrupt that. Maybe you skip them once, maybe it's twice. I think that would be a way to ease back, pull back a little from that, you know, when you're creeping close to 200, and at the same time get Sanchez a little bit of rest. So that could work. But the one thing that we've seen with the Blue Jays is they've adapted their plan, is that they certainly aren't married to one approach. They've adjusted as the season has gone along, and I don't know that we've seen the end of those adjustments. I mean, I won't be surprised if they go back to five, or if they tinker in this way or that way and find a way to ease Sanchez's workload to make sure that he is healthy to pitch in the playoffs.
you're basically in a position right now, if Aaron Sanchez keeps starting, you know, every 6 days or whatever, every seven, who knows, where he's gonna break an innings threshold here. Like, he's going to spike his innings to a degree that's somewhat unprecedented. And like I'm not the biggest fan of using innings to measure that. I think you have way, way better resources to do it. But whenever the Blue Jays front office talks about it, they talk about innings. So we kind of have to go with the innings thing here. It's like the Blue Jays are going to get into uncomfortable territory pretty quickly with every Aaron Sanchez start, because he goes seven innings every time he's out.
I wonder if that changes. You know, I wonder if they do end up going to their bullpen, which in the last, you know, let's say 6 weeks or so, has probably become a lot more reliable, with the exception, I would say, of the left-handers in the bullpen. I mean, Cecil hasn't stabilized to the degree that I think we expected he would, and they don't have a second lefty in there at this moment. But you look at their right-handers, Asuna, Grilly, Benoit has pitched well out there. They have a little bit more depth in their relief corps than they did a few months ago.
Right. And so how does that pertain to Sanchez then? Because you're just more comfortable with not moving him back there.
Yeah.
So you don't think they need the help as much as they did before the trade deadline.
Right. I mean, so say it's May 10th, okay, and the bullpen's a disaster. Yeah. Sanchez is out there. He's cruising through five, six innings. You're putting him out there for the seventh. At this point in the season, if it's August 10th or September 10th, then maybe you're more likely to go to a Benoit or go to a Cecil in the seventh inning and save Sanchez that 10 or 15 pitches.
I don't think Aaron Sanchez feels that going to the bullpen is the best thing for his arm. Like, for this, like, not even just for this year, like, for the future. Like, I don't think that's the best. He thinks that's the best thing for him for 2017, 2018, 2019. It's probably a lot of the same arguments that a lot of people have come up with. Well, you know, yeah, because you go to the bullpen, you're throwing harder, your routine is less predictable, you know, you're getting up and warming up to get into a game, and then sometimes you don't get in. You know, you're getting hot, like, you're using a lot of bullets, like, it's a much different stress that you're putting under your arm rather than just the regular routine of every 5 days or every 6 days now. This is when I throw my side, and this is when I do these, you know, my core exercises, and this is when I do my dynamic stuff. Like, right now, you know, you can really map it out and plan exactly what you're going to do, whereas in the bullpen, it's harder to manage that.
For sure. And so that allows Sanchez to stay on his regular routine. And so far, the result, I mean, at this point, he might be the Cy Young front runner. He's in that discussion. He's in that top three, top four, somewhere in there. You have obviously names like the Indian starters. Chris Sale, of course, would be in that mix. But you're talking about someone who's got a legit chance at some hardware, too.
Is Corey Kluber sneaking into that as I quickly pull up the Fangraphs WAR leaderboard?
He's
I didn't even realize that he's like kind of snuck into that.
I don't think that he would win it, but he's one of those annual guys. Like, every year he deserves consideration.
For some reason, I thought he was having a down year.
Well, his ERA was, when he made the All-Star team, his ERA was 3.7 or something.
Right.
But he's kind of picked it up as the season's gone along.
Good for him. Good for him. Masahiro Tanaka also up there. Another name that I wouldn't have immediately thought of as perhaps being in consideration.
He's having a sneaky good year. I mean, it's funny too, when you think of the Yankees, like, who's their best player now? And Tanaka's a guy that you have to put in consideration there.
I don't know, Betances.
They don't. It's funny because you used to thinking of the Yankees as a team with so many stars, so many big name players. Like, I think it's a legitimate question: who's their best player?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it like an Ellsbury, like Gardner?
I don't think it's Ellsbury. Yeah. Maybe Gregorius. I mean, there's no clear choice. But Tanaka might be the guy.
Right. Interesting. That's a team that's going through some interesting things right there. R.I.P. Alex Rodriguez's career, by the way.
Oh yeah,
That's a little rattling that Alex Rodriguez is no longer going to play baseball.
I hope he signs with the Marlins next year. We have Bonds, Mattingly, A-Rod, Ichiro potentially all in one place. That could be entertaining.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Somebody should give him a shot. Like, I don't know. Do you think he's done?
I think that he's, like, look at the guys who get spring training invites every year. You're telling me that A-Rod isn't worthy of a minor league invite? Yeah. The Yankees are paying the rest of his contract.
Yeah.
I think that on that basis, you bring him in, and I mean, the Marlins, for so many reasons, make sense. They have a left-handed hitting first baseman in Justin Bour. Then you can kind of platoon those guys. I think it's a perfect fit. But, I mean, that's on paper. We'll see if it actually comes to anything. But I would be entertained to see A-Rod have a one last shot with someone else.
I can't imagine some team not wanting to take the shot. And clearly he wants it because he said, yeah, I want to retire after next season. So,
yeah, I wonder.
Yeah.
He's got it's not like a Prince Fielder situation where it's a health issue that's stopping him from playing. A-Rod is willing to play, able to play. It's just that the numbers haven't been there this year.
That's another one that rattles me. The Prince Fielder it's over for him.
That's so disappointing.
Yeah.
I remember just watching him come up with the Brewers and being so excited for what he could do, and then watching him take batting practice here in Toronto a few times. Like, this is a guy who put on displays in batting practice and converted it into games too. His power was so impressive.
And he played like every single day for like 6 years. This guy had like over 160 games played season after season after season. And you can say, like, a lot of people, you know, say a lot of things about his body type. The guy's out there every single day playing.
And he's a better athlete than people give him credit for. Yeah. I mean, if you look at him, it's not like a gazelle running, but the foot speed wasn't bad. The foot speed really wasn't bad. And if you saw him, you know, beating out double plays or hustling for doubles, especially early in his career, he could move.
Yeah. Hopefully the Rangers have a decent amount of insurance on that contract, because as I look at it right now, $24 million a year for every year until 2020. $6 million of it paid for by the Detroit Tigers. So $18 million a year on the hook for the Texas Rangers until 2020. They've got to have some sort of insurance on it, you would think.
Yeah,
generally. Especially with, I know what we just said, but especially with the body type, you would think that they would have put some insurance on that.
Those big contracts for those aging sluggers. I mean, even Teixeira, right? Like, he's someone who signed that huge deal and it paid off. They won the World Series in 2009 with him. But, you know, by the end of it, those free aging contracts are going to look pretty ugly.
Good thing the Blue Jays don't have to deal with big contracts for aging sluggers.
Or do they? Who knows? Yeah.
This isn't even on our sked, but can we have a quick Jose Bautista discussion?
Yeah.
About his, I mean, how much longer this guy can play right field.
Where do you land on that?
I'm a big fan of Jose Bautista as a baseball player, but I think it's in his best interests right now to show a team that he can play first base.
That's interesting.
Going into free agency, yeah. I think that he should probably be, you know, telling the Blue Jays, like, hey, like, I'll take some, you know, put me in at first. I'll take some reps. I'll take some days at first. And then just to show teams he can do it.
That way, too, with the surplus of outfielders that the Blue Jays have, you could have, say, Pilar, Upton, if Upton starts hitting, which I think he will, for the record.
Right.
So then you'd have Saunders, Pilar, and Upton in your outfield, Edwin DHing, and then you'd have Bautista at first.
Right.
Theoretically.
Right. You got Justin Smoke on the bench. I feel like that might be your best roster.
Yeah, you could make that case, because let's face it, Bautista right now is a below average defensive outfielder. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in the category of slugger whose mobility and reads in the outfield don't frankly seem to be very good. And that can change week to week. I mean, who knows? He'll make a great play tonight, but it hasn't been a good defensive season for Bautista.
No, I think he's got a tremendous amount of awareness out there. I think he's got a lot of savvy, not just in, you know, in the field, but on the base paths. Like, I think he reads the game very well and he understands what's happening. I think just physically at 36, yeah, I mean, his best days in the outfield are certainly behind him. I don't know. Is he going to be able to be like a Beltran and play the outfield till he's 40? And, like, I don't know. Is there, you know, are there, because Jose Bautista still tries to make really athletic, dynamic plays, and power to him. Go ahead. Like, do that. I feel like Beltran got to a point where he was just kind of like, I'll get to what I can get to.
Right. He's not trying to be that fleet-footed center fielder he was back in the day with the Royals. So, yeah, I think that when it comes to Bautista, you know, he's an exception already to be an everyday right fielder at 35. Most guys by that point are A, out of the game, or if they're in the game, they're DH or maybe a first baseman. So he's already beaten the odds by staying in the outfield for this long. Can he do it for much longer? Who knows? Right now, it's not a good look. And it's not just that one play, but, you know, the throwing arm too, it seems as though he doesn't unleash those throws that we saw from him as often as he once did.
Yeah, I'm not an athletic trainer, but the throwing motion looks different than it used to. The throwing motion isn't exactly over the top anymore. It's coming off the side a bit, which is fine. Like, he still gets the ball in at a reasonable clip, but I don't think you're going to see him throw out runners at home anymore.
What are you seeing from Bautista at the plate these days?
Still see the power, still see the plate approach. The discipline's great. I mean, that's his best weapon as a baseball player, I think, is his plate vision and his discipline. Like, he understands the strike zone better than anybody, and that's still there. I think we've kind of been waiting all season for him to hit kind of for average the way that he has in recent years. Like, you haven't seen that be there yet. He's got a 221 average this year. And really, like, even you look at the OPS at 793 is way off of where it would normally be. But, you know, you still, the power is obviously still there. We've seen him hit some bombs. You see him hit, you know, doubles to the wall. It's just not quite as consistent. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that we could see a power surge from him. I mean, he's got it. I think that we could see him go off for, you know, 7 homers in 12 games, something like that. It wouldn't surprise me when you look at his track record, which last year he hit 40 home runs. That's not a long time ago. So I think it's still there. I think that he's got a strong offensive finish in there. And I think that's essentially, I mean, that's why he's a star. He's a star because of his power, like you said, because of his plate approach, which is off the charts. And, you know, the defense has never been the focal point with the Blue Jays, and probably at this point it's much less so, because that's probably dropped off. And the power, based on what we saw last year, should still be there, should still be elite.
What do you think that a move to first base would help both him for free agency and the Blue Jays this year, for letting them field a better lineup all around?
Yeah, because if you're the Blue Jays, versatility helps. You want to have as many options as possible. You don't want to be putting guys in uncomfortable positions. You know, that's why even when Darwin Barney played the outfield for a couple games, great. It helps them. It helps him. And I think the same goes for Batista. Anytime that, you know, not that he's going to go back to being the super utility player he was 10 years ago, but anytime you have a guy who can help you in different ways, whether it's in a pinch or in extra innings, it's probably going to help your team. And for Batista, yeah, it doesn't hurt to be able to point to that on your resume.
That's the thing. I think it helps him as well. So I think there is reason for both sides to make a move like that. You mentioned Melvin Upton earlier, not, you know, the early returns on him in a Blue Jays uniform. We've got 37 plate appearances, hitting 139, 162, 139. That's a slash line. This is very bad. In San Diego, 256, 304, 439. At 743 OPS, 16 bombs. He was good in San Diego. I expect that he will be good in Toronto. I don't know why these first 12 games, which has only been a dozen games, by the way. It's only been 12. It's a little slump. If this was April 4th through whatever, through 16th, we'd just all be like, oh, it's just an early season slump. So it is just a slump. But I expect he'll turn it around. What do you think of the early returns on Melvin Upton Jr.?
Well, they've been really bad, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that you said it right away. It's 37 plate appearances, which is, it's really not a lot.
Nothing.
And especially, I think that guys who strike out a lot, and Upton is definitely one of them, Justin Smoke is another, I think that these guys seem streakier than other players.
Right.
Just because they strike out a lot, so you're not dealing with a lot of batted balls. You're essentially dealing with just a lot of Ks, and then you have a little bit of bad luck or a little bit of slump, a little bit of bad performance, and it looks really ugly. And that's the way it looks right now. But I mean, to read into 37 plate appearances would be completely rash, in my opinion.
It's a little unfair.
Yeah.
And now Melvin Upton kind of has this opportunity to play every day, which is, you know, something that coming into Toronto was, you know, said many times, is that this is a guy who plays best when he's in the lineup every day and he has consistency and he knows he's going to be in there. He had never really before in his career been a fourth outfielder. So it was going to be an adjustment for him. So now with Kevin Pillar out, he has that opportunity to be in the lineup every single day.
Yeah.
Which could help.
It could. And this is why the addition of Upton was key in the first place. It's because you had a trio of outfielders in Batista, Saunders, and Pillar who are playing essentially every day up to that point. And they are going to experience wear and tear. You know, it's such a long season. You play so many games. And it was almost inevitable that someone was going to need a few days, a DL stint. Now the Blue Jays are in this position where they can actually have Pillar go down and they have a capable big league outfielder. And Carrera's down too. So they have two outfielders down and they're still able to field a capable outfield. That's why you go out and make these moves.
It's interesting. The 6-man rotation kind of puts them in that bind where Kevin Pillar was kind of saying, yeah, I would, you know, I'd need like 3-4 days. Like that's what I need. But because of the six, I mean, they only had 3 bench players. You had to DL Kevin Pillar.
The next few weeks, as far as their roster, are going to be tricky because you're essentially going, until rosters expand, you have either a 3-man bench or a short bullpen. And I don't think either one of those is particularly comfortable, but that's the sacrifice that they are going to have to make.
September can't come soon enough. Is what I keep telling people. It can't come soon enough for this team because they it's not exactly a young team out there. You know, it's
very old team.
Yeah. So there's a lot of guys you want to get days off and they don't really have that luxury at the moment.
this is not, I mean, you look at the Red Sox position players and their age, and the Blue Jays position players and their age, there's a significant difference there. And so, like you said, you get to September, it's just easier in a blowout game even to substitute guys out, give them a few innings off, whether you're ahead or behind. Those things become easier, but you got to, of course, get there and hold off a couple of pretty good teams in the process.
And we are getting there on At The Letters. We're going to step away, come back, answer your burning questions, all that, so much more on At The Letters.
Blue Jays fans, it's the one podcast you don't want to miss. At The Letters with Ben Nicholson-Smith and Arden Zwelling. Check it out on sportsnet.ca and iTunes.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. You can get me on Twitter, at Arden Zwelling. You can get Ben on Twitter, at B. Nicholson-Smith. And you can get our producer, Sam McKee, on Twitter, at Sam A. McKee. He loves hearing from you, especially if you could tweet him every single day. He loves it. Loves hearing from the fans. We're going to do an ATL mailbag, speaking of the fans. And we thank you for your questions. If we don't answer them, I promise you there was a really good reason why we didn't answer it. Starting with at Jonas Grant 26. Thoughts on replacing Justin Smoke with Jesus Montero?
Well, thoughts, Ben? My thoughts are that Justin Smoke is your better option. I think that you stick with Smoke. Montero is having a good year at AAA, but I think Smoke just gives you more. You know, he's got a track record of hitting a lot of home runs in the big leagues, switch hitter, defense. He's slumping now, for sure. But don't think that calling Montero up would suddenly give you this first baseman who's never going to slump.
Jesus Montero has a 784 OPS with the Buffalo Bisons this year. He's hitting 312. He went 4-for-5 the other night. Showed some pop. But yeah, I mean, Justin Smoke and Jesus Montero just, I don't know, they're interchangeable to me, really. If anything, Justin Smoke just gives you more versatility as a switch hitter. He's a better defensive first baseman.
Far better.
Yeah, he's a better defensive first baseman. He's already on the team and in the clubhouse, so assimilated, and he's a good presence in there, and guys like him. Like, you're not solving any massive problems by, like, promoting Jesus Montero. If Jesus Montero was going to set the world on fire and be this terrific, incredible hitter, some team, he would be on a team.
If the Blue Jays wanted him, he would be on the Blue Jays.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody has chances. More information about Jesus Montero than the Toronto Blue Jays. And they're kind of, and at no point have they even, you know, hinted at calling him up.
Yeah. Matt Dominguez was ahead of him on the depth chart early in the season.
Yeah. And didn't we see, why am I forgetting his name? That
Andy Burns.
Yeah, Andy Burns. Right? We've seen Andy Burns up. We've seen it like a lot of other players come up. You know, Darryl Siciliani.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, he's come up. The Blue Jays needed an outfielder, but still, he was, you know, there's been guys ahead of them.
Next question comes from at Mom Jeans Mommy. And the question is...
What?
the question is...
Just Ben reading that.
This is a good one for you, Arden. Where can I get a decent bite that doesn't bite at the Sky Dome? This is serious. So best food at the Sky Dome?
I'm not giving away my secrets.
No?
I've got my spot. I don't want to give it away because I went down there yesterday and the line was ridiculous. Oh. And then I have to wait in that line forever.
So look for Arden on the, I'll say it's on the 100 level. Look for Arden and then follow him. And then that will lead you to his favorite spot.
I can't give away my secrets. You know what's good? Fat Bastard Burrito is pretty good. That's right around the corner.
Yep.
That's a good little spot. Miney Sushi right across the street. Really good sushi. Right beside the St. Louis there. Really good sushi.
It's nice too because it's a little different from the normal ballpark food, you know?
I think a lot of people don't know. You can bring food in.
Yeah,
like you could bring in anything. You could roast like a brisket and bring it in. Like you can do whatever you want. Like they can't stop you. So I think a lot of people don't understand that.
It's a real perk, actually.
Go to that. There's like a Sobeys right down the street in City Place there. Like go pick up some like hot and ready stuff.
That's the way to go.
Bring it in.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm up now to read a question and I'm not prepared for it. So let me have you got one ready to go?
So here's one.
Yeah.
This is from James NTO. I wonder if Travis, more in the meat of the order, is a better configuration with the way Josh Donaldson and Edwin Encarnacion still draw walks. So the thinking that, you know, you bump Travis down a little bit and then you have the Donaldson, Encarnacion, Batista trio getting on base a ton ahead of him.
So you want Devin Travis like 5 or 4 even?
That seems to be the situation.
So you would go like Jose, Josh, Edwin, Travis.
Maybe Saunders before
Maybe
him,
Saunders
somewhere
before that. Yeah.
What do you think?
I wouldn't want to overreact to like a, you know, a small sample for Devin Travis. He's been really good. And he puts the bat in the ball really well. I wonder if, you know, I do like the idea of having it go Bautista, Donaldson, Edwin Encarnacion, 1-2-3. Like, I do like that configuration a lot. I don't know if I'd go to Travis at 4 or 5. I don't know if he's that kind of hitter. Like, he does make really good contact. He is hitting very well. He's done very well, very good. I don't know. I wonder. I think the Blue Jays really like him as a leadoff hitter. I think the Blue Jays really want him to be a leadoff hitter, and they like the tools he has up there. He's not going to take a ton of walks, but he does put the bat on the ball exceptionally well.
I like Travis a lot as a leadoff hitter because he's a really good hitter, first of all. So then you're adding at-bats for one of your better hitters. And he gets on base enough, and you're not, quote-unquote, wasting home runs. You're not getting tons of solo home runs because Travis, he has pretty good power. He's probably more of a 20-homer guy than a 40-homer guy. And so that's where I feel like he's a better fit there than someone like Bautista, who, if you have him there, you're going to get a lot of solo. A quarter of his homers are going to be solo shots.
There isn't a natural spot for Devin Travis because he's not a natural leadoff guy. He's also not a natural heart of the order guy. I don't know. Although, I mean, look, the guy's got an 853 career OPS, and it's in less than a full season, so we have to remember that. But the guy has hit for power.
And I think what we're seeing,
can't take that away from him.
Around baseball, a lot of the time, you know, the idea of having a traditional leadoff man is falling by the wayside. You don't see a lot of, maybe Ben Revere would be one of them. I don't see a lot of them. When you look around, teams are stacking the order just with their best hitters. The Blue Jays certainly included in that trend, and Travis right now is one of their best hitters.
Like, you look at Devin Travis's career, and right now he's got 484 career plate appearances. He's got 32 doubles, 18 bombs. So you extrapolate that to like a 600 plate appearance season or 620 or whatever, you end up with like a 25 homer guy and like a 40 plus double guy.
He's a guy the Jays could look at extending.
That would be interesting.
It would be.
That would be interesting.
There's probably not a lot of urgency there because you can just go year to year and play it safe. But, you know, it's a conversation that, you know, it would be prudent for them to look at that internally.
Eligible for arbitration in 2018. So you can renew him next year, but then you got to get into arbitration with him. He's hitting a lot of home runs, which pay you some money in arbitration. So maybe there is cause for concern there for the Blue Jays about what kind of prices they'd have to be paying.
Although they can always afford it. And going year to year isn't the worst thing. But, you know, if he's amenable, you wonder. Maybe you have a discussion.
And you know, the thing is, the Blue Jays know a lot about his medicals. And I think that's going to be something that's going to follow him for a while, just with the extra bone that he had in his shoulder and that whole deal, and how much time he missed with that. So I think that's going to be a thing. But the Blue Jays, so they know his medicals, and they certainly know the personality, and they know the makeup. They know how he fits in. So they would have all the information they need if they wanted to take those steps.
He's certainly a guy that, if he's producing like this, I mean, he would be one of the better second basemen in baseball. And now we've seen it in two separate years. It's really impressive what we've seen from Travis.
Undeniably. At Sack Bunt, assuming no more in-season extensions, which free agents get qualifying offers from the Blue Jays at season's end?
I think, to me, this is a pretty straightforward question now. I think that it's Saunders, Bautista, and Encarnacion.
Is Saunders definite?
To me, he should be.
I wonder. I feel like he'd take it.
I feel like he wouldn't.
No? Why?
If you're in his position, if you're hitting free agency at 29, coming off the best season of your career for a contending team, in an outfield market that is particularly weak,
right,
at a time that a lot of teams have money to spend, would you take it?
I would look at it if I'm a GM and I look at that outfield market and I say, well, you know, now Michael Saunders is going to cost me a draft pick. I've got some serious medical concerns, injury concerns about him. He had a really good first half, but then after the All-Star break, he fell off a cliff.
He hasn't offensively fallen off a cliff.
He's been pretty poor offensively since the All-Star break.
Let's look it up.
I think that's fair to say. So if I'm a GM and I'm looking at the, I mean, is, you know, I don't know if I'm going above and beyond for Michael Saunders. I don't know. And I love Michael Saunders. Like, I'm so happy that he's had the year that he's had. Since the All-Star break, Michael Saunders is hitting 162, 310, 338.
So that's not good. You know, it's not. He's got a 648 OPS in that time.
Yeah, 648.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. Horrible. I mean,
you're going to argue this is.
No, there are a lot of good hitters. Chris Davis, Mark Trumbo, there are a lot of good hitters who in a 3-week period of time are not going to play well. Everyone's entitled to a slump. If this continues, it's a bigger concern. If you look at the pace that he's on, the overall season, I think he's definitely worth a qualifying offer.
What about R.A. Dickey?
I think he's not, because Dickey would be wise to accept, in my opinion.
It would be a significant raise than what he's making now.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. I wonder what the free agent market will even look like for Ari Dickey.
It's a great question. Yeah.
Right? Like, that's an interesting case if you're a GM.
Because there's really not much out there in terms of starting pitching.
I mean, right.
You're looking around and, okay, you've got Rich Hill, but so many injury questions surround him.
Yep.
I mean, who else is out there? Hellickson is going to be out there. He's probably going to get a multi-year deal at a pretty generous offer, but he'll be linked to a draft pick. I mean, right. It's interesting.
God, I'm trying to, we're forgetting somebody. But yeah, well, I mean, if you're like, you're looking at a starter in R.I. Dickey, like if you just kind of forget that he throws a knuckleball and that he carries a personal catcher, the guy goes 200 innings at a sub-4 ERA in the American League East. It's really good. You know what I mean? If you had a conventional pitcher who did that, you'd be like, this, like, I think he'd be worth a lot more money. But it's kind of the uncertainty of the knuckleball and the fact that you got to bring a catcher with him.
Yeah.
Like, that changes his value.
I wonder. I mean,
but if you looked at just the numbers and you didn't know that it was, you know, the style of pitch that he throws, you'd say this guy is going to get a lot of money.
Is Tim Wakefield at all a relevant comparison for Dickey? I mean, because he never reached the heights that Dickey did.
Right.
And he was used more of as a swing reliever. But, you know, it didn't seem as though the free agent market was crazy for Wakefield.
No, no, it was not. But he did many years in Boston at around $4 million, basically.
Yeah. And they had that kind of perpetual option.
Yeah.
And yeah, to be fair, Dickey has been considerably better than Wakefield. I mean, Dickey has had a 4 or 5 year period of time where he's been a very good pitcher. But yeah, I wonder. You know, you could see it going either way. You could see him getting a really generous contract, or you know, if he falters down the stretch, then maybe he's more of a, you know, rebuild value type of guy.
Do you see any way that the Toronto Blue, that Ari Dickey's the Toronto Blue Jay next year?
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. Do you?
Me neither. Yeah. No, I really don't. You just know now that you have Liriano, if you want to transition Joe Biagini into being a starter next year, like I could see a scenario where Joe Biagini starts next year at AAA as a starter and is kind of that Drew Hutchison guy, like that sixth dude, you know, like that. And so now that you've got, you know, next year, if you're, it's still so early, so much could happen. Projecting forward to next year, Sanchez, Stroman, Hap, Estrada, 4 guys under contract. Those are your top 4. And then Liriano, exactly.
You're 5.
Exactly. And then Liriano. And then as your 5, which is actually a pretty nice little rotation. And then Joe Biagini is like your depth sixth starter. And then whatever, you know, whatever like Wade LeBlanc's you kind of find out there.
Yep.
And I don't know, who knows, maybe a Connor Green is taking a step forward, or a Sean Reed Foley is taking a step forward. And one of those guys could, you know, next in the middle of 2017 be called up to make their major league debuts.
Yep. I think that's the way it looks. And so, yeah, they're not qualifying Dickey.
Please,
next up,
please.
Matt DiNicolantonio, someone I know personally.
Whoa.
What do you make of Blue Jays starters' stats with extra rest, and how might that affect the 6-man rotation?
Well, you can look that stuff up, and generally there's not going to be that many. Like, it's not going to be a big sample when you're looking at guys on 6 days rest or 7 days rest or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to have happened that much, and you never know what has been happening in that 6 day period. Like, I don't put too much weight on it.
Yeah, it's tricky because a lot of the time you are dealing with such a small view.
Yeah.
You know, with certain pitchers like Masahiro Tanaka, it really seems to help them. With other guys, I mean, if you're Clayton Kershaw, I think you want to be pitching every 5 days.
Yeah.
Or a Bumgarner, that type of guy is not going to take well to a 6-man rotation. So it does seem like one of the many things that has to be tailored almost to the individual starters.
Like Tanaka's UCL is held together with scotch tape. Like,
so we are led to believe.
So yeah, I'm sure that would help him. But yeah, I think it's so different for each guy, right? So I bet you like Ari Dickey probably feels his best when he's going every 5 days. I don't think he likes extra rest. He bounces back faster than other pitchers, right? And so, and with the knuckleball such a feel thing, you want to be out there throwing it as much as possible, I would think.
Agreed.
All right. At WB222, are there any moves you could see the Jays making before the August 31st deadline? Possibly a first base upgrade.
See, first base to me is tough. I don't see them making an upgrade there. You hear speculation about a lefty bat. I don't know where it fits on the bench in the short term. You know, maybe once rosters expand, that's a different story. Short term, I see a short bench. I don't see a lot of room. if you're talking about the end of August, I think, like we've said before, lefty relief, catching would be an area to look at. And you're always on the lookout for pitching in general.
Just the way the roster's configured right now with the six-man rotation. How are you going to... You can't fit a position player in. You really can't. And, like, I know for a fact the Blue Jays would love a lefty bat. Like, they would just... to balance out that order. Because right now, if the Jays run into a righty who's having a really nice afternoon, that righty can give the Jays fits, really. I think the Blue Jays would love to have that lefty bat. But, yeah, it doesn't fit right now. Maybe in September it does. I don't know if it's out there.
Justin Morneau having a good year.
The Blue Jays could have had Justin Morneau when he was a free agent. And they didn't, right? The White Sox went and got him.
Right.
The Blue Jays passed once already.
But teams make that kind of addition where it's, you know, someone else has taken on the risk and they've given him the opportunity and then he can come over and take on a smaller role potentially.
Right.
You wonder.
Yeah. I just feel like they already passed on him. But yeah. And is he going to be better than Justin Smoke? I know everybody hates Justin Smoke right now, but I don't know. Is he really going to be better than Justin Smoke? I'm not convinced.
Right. No. Yeah. I think that Smoke is perfectly serviceable.
People don't like hearing that.
They don't.
They don't like hearing that at all. They don't like hearing that at all.
He's capable of, you know, helping you in a few ways.
Absolutely.
Next up from Andrew Harrington. When Zeke returns, do you consider platooning him and Melvin Upton Jr. in right field, making Bautista the DH with Encarnacion playing first base?
Earlier on this very podcast, I was kind of advocating for Jose Bautista move into first base. And yeah, if you could also DH Bautista with Eddie at first if you wanted to do that. You could kind of switch them. I don't know if I'm... like searching for ways to get Ezekiel Carrera into the lineup. Ezekiel Carrera is what he is. I think Melvin Upton has a lot more upside.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. And maybe if you're facing a really tough righty, maybe at that point you're trying to get Carrera some playing time. You get him in there, that's a good way to go. And then at that point you have Upton on the bench. He's able to steal a base for you potentially because this team really doesn't have a lot of speed. And having Upton as a potential pinch runner is an extra dynamic that we haven't seen much at all from the Jays this year.
Like, I wouldn't go to a straight platoon of Upton Carrera.
Right.
Would you?
No.
Yeah, I don't. I think Upton has to be your starter. I think you want Upton in every day.
Yeah, more or less. Especially against lefties, but, you know, against a lot of righties too.
And I know this can be, like, maddening for fans to hear that, like, hey, you know that guy who's slumping? Let's give him more playing time. But I really do think that every day at bats would help Melvin Upton Jr.
And these slumps aren't going to last forever with guys like Smoke and Upton.
And like you were saying, with, you know, Bautista being liable to go on a serious tear, I think Melvin Upton is too. Because Melvin Upton is, I would say, a much streakier hitter. So I think he's liable to go on like a 7-day run where he's hitting everything.
He's got a lot more than he's shown so far.
Undoubtedly. At Adrian Chrysostom, I think the Jays could use a left-handed bat for the bench. Maybe Coco Crisp in August. I don't trust Smoke Zeke AAA.
Getting back to that roster crunch. I mean, it's just, where are you going to put this player in August? And that's why, you know, on the 31st of August, you see teams make moves where they don't have to carry the player in August. They can have them in September and then they're still playoff eligible.
Yeah, you need the guy to be in your organization before September 1st to be playoff eligible. That's why last year Darren Barney was not, because he was acquired sometime in September. So Blue Jays just needed a warm body. But he needs to be in. So yeah, it would have to happen certainly before August 31st.
Next up, Andrew B. Scanlon wants to know, what kind of contract can Bautista reasonably expect at this point? Has 2016 seriously altered his value?
I would say so far it's seriously altered his value. Absolutely. We have to kind of see how he finishes the year. Because, you know, who knows? He could have like a monstrous 8 weeks to finish this season. Like, he could go into the postseason and hit a couple more. Like, the way that teams value postseason performance over regular season performance is a very real thing. Like, I remember in exec last year saying, you know, as Marco Estrada was making those amazing starts in the postseason, he was saying, yeah, like a postseason win is worth like 5 regular season wins. Like, it's crazy.
You have a lot of eyeballs on you in the postseason. Yeah. What do you think executives from losing teams are doing? They're watching these games. they have an eye on what's going on. And so Bautista has a chance to rewrite the ending to this season, and that would go a long way toward reestablishing some of that value. There's no denying that being on the disabled list is not going to help your value. So far, you know, he's had ups and downs, but, you know, he's got a chance in the next couple months to put a strong finish on this season.
What do you think about, I mean, Jose Bautista so far, he hasn't been worth a win. He's been worth 0.7 wins above replacement, which is far off what we are used to seeing from him. His isolated slugging is down. He's walking about the same clip that he usually does. He's striking out more. Are the peripherals encouraging at all to you or not?
I think with Bautista, there's such a long track record and such a recent track record of success that I don't know that teams are going to assess him on his wins above replacement. I think that they're going to assess him on how would he look in this setting, in this park, in this lineup, playing this position. I think basically the league knows who he is at this point. And so really when it comes to a guy like him, it's going to be his on-base percentage and his home runs that more or less are going to dictate where that free agent value ends up.
Power pays.
Oh, yeah.
Power pays. And Jose Bautista has a lot of power. He hit 40 home runs last year. He's missed a big chunk of the season and underperformed for another big chunk of it, and he's still going to be well over 20 home runs, I would bet. I don't know how many he has today, but...
15.
15, yeah. Without a doubt, it'll be over 20 home runs. Power pays, man. People pay for that. What else we got here? At We Sheepkins, should we be concerned about the Blue Jays' slumping offense?
No.
Be fine. It's Toronto Blue Jays.
From at
it's the Ride... last thing I'm concerned about.
Yeah. I think that... They will be fine. At Ride the Spiral wants to know, how about having Sanchez in our bullpen would fix all our problems? Well, most of them.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you want me to say?
He's having a great season. He's having a great season in the rotation. And as we've talked about, I think a lot of times, I mean, there's going to be a give and take here right now. It's having that six-man rotation. There are going to be ways to try to keep him healthy, try to keep him from deteriorating physically as the year goes on. But I think that as long as he's pitching this well, he's a Cy Young candidate, and taking him out of the rotation is not going to make your team better in the short term.
Yes. Let's just leave that there. At The Real Ancour, would you consider Scott Feldman an upgrade over Jesse Chavez, or are they more or less the same guy?
Well, I would say so far they've filled the same role and they both struggled. I mean, Feldman has not been particularly good.
The results have been pretty similar so far.
Yeah, the results have been similar. If anything, Feldman has been worse than Chavez was, because Chavez had some good runs. They're here to fill the same role. Feldman's track record tells us he should be a lot better than this. So again, I think that if you go back to what he has been, then you're probably looking at someone who's going to give you serviceable innings.
I wonder if Jesse Chavez was maybe a bit better than he gets credit for. He had some serious blow-ups. Like, he had some games where it was so maddening, because you'd see him, like, he'd come in with a couple runners on and then just give up a bomb, like a first pitch bomb, and then he'd come back and strike out like two guys in a row with like nasty cutters and like nice off speed, like great location. Like, he would look great. Like, it was so inconsistent, I guess. Like, I think there were stretches where he was really, really good.
Great.
There was just also like outings where he got lit.
Yeah, there were too many of those, far too many, letting in inherited runners. And, you know, it's true. You could see him having a nice bounce back with someone.
But yeah, they are kind of the same guy in that they're, you know, you want a guy who could pitch like the sixth inning, maybe the seventh if you need him to, a guy who could also give you length out of the bullpen if you need, if you're, you know, like you saw Scott Feldman last night, you know, Blue Jays looked for some length out of him in a blowout, so he could give you that. And a guy who, in a pinch, in a very long pinch, could make a start for you. If Blue Jays needed a starter, would you think it would be Feldman or Bolsinger?
I mean, they have six already.
I know, but if they, yeah, if two
beyond that, I think
fell
they,
off a cliff.
I think they would go Feldman first and then Mike Bolsinger.
Feldman and then Bolsinger? Yeah, I wonder. That's probably the way they'd go. Yeah.
Yeah. It would depend on how stretched out Feldman was, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Next one from Blue Jays for Days. Are we going to see more of Aaron Loop this year?
Yeah, I'd imagine he'll be here in September. He might get up in August if, you know, because like Brett Cecil's your only lefty out there.
Yep.
Unfortunately. So like if he pitches two or three days in a row, you don't have him. So you'd like Aaron Loop could be useful in those situations. They don't have another lefty. So yeah, I wonder if we'll see him in August. I know he's been pitching well in Buffalo. I think we'll definitely see him in September. You're going to see him.
At AAA, 1.26 ERA, 17 strikeouts in 14.1 innings. Not bad.
Yeah, no, it's been really good. So what do you think?
Yeah, we'll see him before the end of the year, I think.
What about Liriano slash, or sorry, I should read the name first. At Devin Gerwing, what about Liriano slash Sanchez taking turns as fifth man? Pitch every 10 days to cut down Sanchez's innings.
I don't see them doing that because, you know, going back to Sanchez's involvement in this, he's been a part of this discussion. And I don't know that he would want to pitch every 10 days. You know, that would be a completely new type of rhythm for a starting pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you see him liking that idea?
No, yeah. Absolutely not. Yeah. I definitely don't. But also, if you pitched every 10 days, you would have to throw like a pretty extensive bullpen in between. Probably a couple of bullpens. Like, you'd probably have to throw a pretty extensive bullpen every 3 days just to keep your arm loose and just to keep it going. Like, you can't, like, that's like Marco Estrada was saying last night. Like, he felt rusty because he didn't throw much of a bullpen between his two starts and he went a week without pitching. So he got on the mound. He didn't really have his feel, he didn't have his command. Like, you gotta, you, as counterintuitive as it can sound, like, you have to keep throwing consistently and regularly to be at your best. So for a guy that you're trying to protect, like Aaron Sanchez, you're trying to have him throw as few pitches as possible. You want him throwing consistently because that's when pitches are at their best.
Staying on the Sanchez topic, from hashtag Plumlee, is the Sanchez thing about guaranteeing him 162 innings so he can potentially win the ERA title / Cy Young?
I think it's about him being really, really good, like, first and foremost. You know, it doesn't hurt that he's, like, he could win a Cy Young, but I don't think the Blue Jays are thinking that we need to get him to X amount of innings to... Like, nobody who's, I can't imagine there's ever been a pitcher who threw exactly 162 innings who won the Cy Young Award. That's too few. You need to throw more.
Or you have to be a reliever who's dominant.
Yeah, right? But, like, what kind of reliever throws 162 innings?
Right. I mean, you could be like a Eric Gagne or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're throwing 80.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you don't see a lot of guys in that middle.
So it's not like they're going to get him to 162 and a third and be like, all right, you're done because now you qualify for the Cy Young voting. Like, it's... It's ridiculous.
Even as it stands now, like, if he gets to 180, 190, it's going to be an uphill battle because there are going to be guys who surpass 200 innings and have great numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron Sanchez is good. That's why he's still pitching. That's why he's still starting. It's a good thing. Really good starting pitcher. That's what gets lost in, like, that's not enough people are, like, paying attention to what a good season he's having, right? Like, it's just all the talks about, you know, innings, 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 shut him down, this and that. You're watching a homegrown pitcher, somebody the Blue Jays drafted, developed, and have now morphed into one of the best pitchers in the American League. They developed him into this, and that is something to be celebrated.
He's having a phenomenal year. No question.
It is. This is the Blue Jays, like, homegrown. This is your, like, your Kershaw. This is your whoever, right?
Well,
this is.
He's not a Kershaw.
I'm not saying he's Clayton Kershaw. But
you
I'm
just
saying
said
this
he's
is
your
the,
Kershaw.
This is your guy that you have developed and brought up through your system.
Maybe he's a Wainwright. Maybe he's.
This is your. I'm not saying he's going to pitch as well as Clayton Kershaw.
Maybe he's your Brandon Webb.
I'm saying this
Derek
is your front of the rotation ace that you developed and that you built and drafted.
Yeah.
And the Blue Jays, who have such a pickled history of, like, drafting and developing. For them to finally win. Nobody talks about it.
That's why we're talking. Bonus segment at the letters. This is where you come for your Aaron Sanchez reality dose.
All right. Last one from at Thrilliums 79. What kind of a leash do you give Francisco Liriano if he has one or two starts where he goes five innings, walks four, gives up five earned runs? What's the leash on Liriano, basically?
It's an interesting question. I wonder. I mean, I would think that if he really struggles two or three times in a row, then maybe you go to five. And one thing that I have wondered about, and, you know, I have to stop myself because they might not make the playoffs, and, you know, this could all be for nothing.
You're out of control, then.
I know.
Rein it in.
Spinning out of control. But when you look at a potential playoff rotation, which isn't crazy, they're tied for the American League East with 50 games to go. So this is a realistic possibility that they're going to be in the division series using four starters.
Better chance than last year when right now they were like six games out. Yeah.
Well, by now I think they'd made some games. They were like two. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that the Blue Jays now would go Sanchez, Happ, Estrada. That's your three. And then your fourth would be, I think, either Liriano or Stroman. But if it was Stroman, Liriano is so good left on left in his career that he could be a very effective reliever.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's apparently, like, the club has said that he was open to go into the bullpen if he had to. So it sounds like he's willing to do whatever. It's not like
Like, you could very easily point at his numbers as a starter this year and say, here's why we're moving you to the bullpen, Francisco. Like, it's not like he can make a big stink about it. You could say, Francisco, you lead baseball in walks. This is why you're going to the bullpen. I thought it was his first start was encouraging. I thought for the first four innings, he looked great. For the next two innings, he kind of lost his feel and lost his command. And that's kind of been a thing for Francisco Liriano this year, is that he hasn't had terrific command. And, you know, John Gibbons is kind of saying, like, don't expect him to be pinpoint guy. Don't expect him to be the guy that's, you know, spotting it. And we have quite a few of those in Toronto where you watch Marco Estrada, who last night, you know, aside, can generally put the ball exactly where he wants to put it. Jay Happ, been pretty good with his command, you know, like
Stroman.
Yeah, Stroman.
Can be.
Fill up the strike zone, right? Aaron Sanchez just lets that two-seamer eat in the strike zone. Francisco Liriano, yeah, he might nibble a bit, you know, like might kind of work around the edges a little bit more than we're used to. So it kind of sticks out. At the same time, if he, you know, if his if he has two or three starts here where he's walking five guys, I don't know how long you can go with that. Like, I don't know. All of a sudden, yeah, I don't know if he's in your playoff rotation. Like, I don't know if he's in your September rotation. Maybe you're moving him to the bullpen.
Right. They're in a pennant race. They've got to win. I mean, let's say they have 64 wins now, right?
I don't have it in front
of me. So they need 27, 28 more wins. You've got to find those somehow. And you have a bunch of games left, but you've got to be well over 500 the rest of the way, even to maintain the pace you're on, let alone if you want to build a lead on Baltimore and Boston.
It'll be interesting to see. That's it. That's it for the questions. Thank you for sending them in. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. I promise there's a good reason for that. That's it for us. For Ben, I'm Arden. Producer Sam McKee. Join us next week on At the Letters.